Well, I'd like to welcome everybody for the last of a series that was supposed to take place last term, but unfortunately Helmut was ill. We had a series of lectures on global civil society to mark the publication of our yearbook, Global Civil Society 2001. When I came to the LSC to run the Global Civil Society program, I thought it would be very good to have an output of this kind and to produce something similar to the Human Development Report that would put global civil society on the map. And I was lucky enough to find that Helmut Anha had come to the LSC at the same time. He'd been previously a professor of sociology at Rutgers University, and he took part in the John Hopkins comparative study of the nonprofit sector together with Lester Salomon, which has become very famous, and really was the first attempt to measure what's the so-called third sector or nonprofit sector or NGOs or whatever you want to call it. And so this was perfect because Helmut took over the task of the data part of our yearbook, which in a way was the most problematic. How can you quantify this strange, difficult to define, ambiguous, normative concept, global civil society? And I think he did a terrific job, and that's very nice that we're going to hear him present some of the ideas that came out of our discussions about the problems of data and measurement. So I will turn to Helmut, and when he's finished, we'll have time to ask him questions.
Thank you.
It worked. Well, thank you very much for coming tonight. I will take about 40 minutes, and that leaves us enough time for questioning. What I would like to do is take you a bit on an intellectual journey. As Mary said in her opening comments, this effort is just a couple of years old, and it's a massive effort trying to quantify and really conceptualize a part of our life that we have not taken very seriously as social scientists. And you'll see that my presentation has really two parts to it. One, it tries to identify where the problem is, and I will probably spend 15 minutes on that, and then spend the most part of the presentation on trying to present a number of different solutions on how we might deal with what is really a persistent data problem in the social sciences. And behind this data problem is not only a lack of data, I think it's at its very core a conceptual issue. And the point I want to make, using this lovely citation from a famous historian I'm sure you've all have come across, that to impress the mind, you need some visual idea of what it is you are talking about, what it is you would like to measure. The social sciences today, I would argue, are really struggling with the development of new concepts and methodology and indeed data generation mechanisms that live up to a world that really has outgrown the institutional framework of early 20th century. And that's really where we are caught in many ways. In the type of data we very often have. So you cannot go to your statistical office, ONS, or whatever it might call it, and ask, what do you have on civil society? They will have very little. And you cannot go to the United Nations Statistical Office and ask them, what do you have on global civil society? They will not have much. They may indeed not understand what you are asking. Right? So the problem about measuring something like global civil society, if we for the moment assume that it's a useful thing to do, is that we have problems with the conceptual framework of the social sciences and then the way in which statistical officers and others who generate social science data pick up these issues. With global civil society, we face really a number of problems. First, it is an emerging reality. Yes, it's also an emerging concept. It is not what the sociologist Evita Zerubbabel referred to as an island of meaning. And it's a very nice term he uses to describe the way in which the conceptual landscape of the social sciences over the last 100 years, if you so wish, has created a certain terminology that we take almost for granted, and with terms by which we associate a certain distinct meaning that makes it different from something else. Even so, the term itself, what we mean by it, is extremely fuzzy. If I say to you, the state, almost immediately we do have an understanding of what a state is, even so the state is a highly, highly complex creature. Or we economists talk about the market, but there are at least 25 different ways to talk about the market and definitions, but we do have a common meaning around it. If I say global civil society, most of us will see a foggy area, not knowing where it is and what it means and how to get there. And we may not even know that we're there. So it's a fuzzy concept, and I think in the yearbook we also argue that it sits somewhat uncomfortably in social science terminology, which is very heavily dominated by disciplines, and a concept like civil society is almost intrinsically interdisciplinary, and then it takes it out to the global level. So if we have all these difficulties, how then can we go about and embark on the task of measuring it or bringing some conceptual clarity to it? And there are indeed some serious issues. One is what we call the statistical world order, which is really very dominated by national statistical offices, and very often their thinking stops at a national border. It is dominated by a number of international statistical offices, but they too have a very particular view of the world. They largely collect economic data, and it's only in recent years that we have become more seriously looking at social data, most notably around the Human Development Report. And what some people have started to call the methodological nationalism, a particular way of viewing the world, or you might say the tendency of the social sciences to remain wedded to and really caught in categories that are more applicable to an industrial society than they are to a post-industrial society and a very complex world of globalization. So the objective, knowing these difficulties, was really to come up with a way to describe the context in which global civil society exists, trying to carve out some of the major facets or dimensions of it, and then in the end explore the possibility of developing what we call a global civil society index. And indeed, this is going to be the last thing I'll talk about at the end, how far we have come in along that road. Measuring global civil society involves a number of problems, a number of challenges. And I spend about 15 minutes on the problems and then we go to solutions. So if you bear with me for a little while longer, I think it's important that you appreciate the basic dilemma that you are up against when you try to conceptualize, measure something that is not, you might say, ready on a supermarket shelf of modern statistical collection agencies. One is the unit of analysis. Typically, most of the data we have at the international level is based on on countries or some regional equivalent of it. But if you want to measure something like global civil society, which by its very definition is not bound by a country, what then is the unit that you are looking for? What is the reporting unit? Similar to that is what has been called the aggregation problem. If global civil society is qualitatively different from national civil societies, how then do we aggregate it? What are the ways in which we say here are the boundaries of it? Then related to that is the problem of indicators and what measures do we really want and what are we looking for, and finally, what data are available to portray civil society. It's important to lay out the assumptions before we go into the solutions. So this is the end of the problem part. There are four assumptions. One is parsimony. We're looking for a way to keep things simple. And we're looking for an approach that did not overly complicate matters. If global civil society is a very emerging phenomenon, if it's not well understood, the measurement system we were thinking of should not even make matters more complicated. Clearly, something like global civil society is multifaceted, so it's very difficult to push it into one measure or one number. So we were looking for a broad-based approach to it. And keeping in mind that it is an emerging reality, an emerging concept, we also thought that a measurement approach to it should be such that it can evolve over time. And finally, and indeed one could spend an entire lecture on this, global civil society, like civil society itself, is normative in its connotation, indeed in its fundamentals, meaning that by measuring something like that and measuring some of the indicators, we think that it's basically a good thing and that we stand in that way behind it. So the initial operationalization, and it's a terrible term, as most of you agree, but the initial way of making a very abstract concept operational so we can use it for measurement purposes and research, try to put it in context. And global civil society is linked to globalization. And it's linked to the international rule of law, but it's not the same thing. These are other processes which are happening, but we are saying they're not synonymous with global civil society. And I'll return to that point later on. We had a working definition. Those of you who have attended others' lectures or some of our conferences know that we struggled long and hard with developing this definition. And it really says that global civil society is a sphere. We're not saying a sector, but it's a sphere, a social sphere of ideas, values, institutions, organizations, and networks. So we throw in everything that there could possibly be. But whatever these entities are, they are located outside other institutional complexes, such as family, state, market, and they operate beyond nation states and societies and economies. This is a very complicated definition, but at its core, it's really very simple, because it says that global civil society has only two elements: organizational entities, right, organizations, associations, networks, foundations, and you know, networks, groups, internet groups, and the like, and individuals. So what we have to think about is what is it about organizations and individuals in a field of global civil society that is of interest to us? And I mentioned to you a moment ago that we said that global civil society exists in a context of globalization and the international rule of law. And what we want to understand is how organizations and individuals are located within this context. And we use the term organizational infrastructure. For whatever global society is, it involves organizational elements, it involves networks, it involves different forms of organizing, but it has these social entities in it. Right? And it involves something about people. We often say that organizations don't act, it is people who act, and these people have values, and they carry out activities. They participate in events or they don't. They support certain political issues or they don't. So we were trying to get a handle on what the participation profile of people in global civil society might be, what their valued dispositions and their attitudes might look like. So once you have to do this little trick, saying we go from a very complicated concept down to entities that we think make up the concept or support it in different ways, the next task is to look for indicators. Indicators of organizational size and scope in one instance, and indicators of participation, values, and individual identity on the other hand. And this makes it just a bit more complicated with the indicators added. And this was a bit of a longish search procedure. We tried to look at what is it we know about organizational entities that somehow operate in this sphere we call global civil society. So that it meant, for example, looking for international non-governmental organizations. It meant looking for the type of activities they carry out. It meant looking for the purpose, for their input. It looked for people volunteer for international non-governmental organizations. It's more than NGOs, but I think we're using NGOs at the moment as international non-governmental organizations, as a prototype of an organization in global civil society. And we did something similar for the part on individual participation in identity, looking at cosmopolitan values. It's a very nice term. I think Mary suggested at some point questions of belonging. Do people say, well, we belong primarily to this town, or do we belong to this country or a region? Then various measures of membership and political participation. This is what you find in the yearbook, largely, with lots of tables behind it. Charts like this, showing about the growth of INGO by purpose, a chart on cosmopolitan values. You don't find these charts in the yearbook, but you find the data. But you can now, at the level of the indicators, come up with a portrait of different facets of global civil society. Membership in global civil society organizations, like in community action groups, environment peace movements, third world groups, and the like, and you see that has slightly increased over the last decade. But is that all? What can you do with the data? Once you are down at a level of identifiable indicators and indeed measurable indicators, as we did in the yearbook 2001, which you see proudly presented right there. And what I would like to do in the remaining part of my presentation is to go a bit deeper into the measurement aspects around global civil society and making this concept a bit more, if you wish, user-friendly and theoretically relevant to social science debates. And there are two ways in which you can do this. There are other ways, right? But I think we want to follow primarily two ways. One is to go down the network route and construct networks and use relation as the unit of analysis. Remember, at the beginning I said we have a unit of analysis problem here. And one way is to simply forget about conventional units of analysis and statistics and go straight to relation between one entity in global civil society to another entity in global civil society. The relationship between individuals in global civil society amongst each other, or between individuals and organizations. Then alternatively, possibly around an index, that we want to come up with an index of global civil society, which, however, as attractive as it is, and it's also the simpler route to take, throws us right back into the country as the unit of analysis. And this is always a bit uneasy, isn't it? If we think about global civil society, in the end, we come up with country rankings of how global they are in civil society. Let me talk about a network approach first. And that helps to bring in some theory. Those of you who have read David Held's work know that he uses for the measurement, or you might say his attempt to operationalize globalization, three aspects: extensity, intensity, and velocity. Extensity is a measure of geographical stretching of activities And it's really indicated by the number of nodes that you have. Organizations, associations, informal networks, activists, participants. And these network nodes constitute the overall spread of the network. So you might say that extensity of these networks refers to the range of global civil society. Next to extensity, we have intensity. Intensity is the overall density of the network in terms of the number and types of connections involved among the various nodes, and intensity indicates how densely the various elements are related to each other. And finally, velocity is a volume measure. It shows how much of information, how much of financial aspects and so on travels on these nodes. Right? Now, David Held uses this to measure globalization of the economy. But I think we can use this in analogy in this case, and rather than looking at trade flows among economic actors, look at the social networks among actors in global civil society. So we come up with these extensity, intensity, and velocity measures, once for global, for the infrastructure of using organizations as the nodes, and once for individual participation and identity. Both require a somewhat different approach, as I'll show in a moment. But going back to our initial operationalization, what we now want to do is to see how extensity, intensity, and velocity relate to these various indicators. And that the problem here is that we have too much going on, so we're looking for ways to simplify it. Right? We would like, ideally, to collapse much of the information, but preserving it while doing so and relating it to the context in which global civil society develops, namely economic globalization and the rule of international rule of law. Now, for those of you not familiar with network analysis, the next step can be a bit adventurous, because you need, going back to the opening quote from Huizinga, you need to be able to visualize what we're really talking about. And what I would like you to do is imagine a globe with organizations, networks, distributed across continents, and with links of various density and thickness among them that reach beyond national boundaries. And if you can imagine such a network, that is indeed the infrastructure of global civil society. Now, going back to Held's term, this is what it would look like. This is one way of simply, what you need to do now, this is your creative bit here, imagine there's a globe behind us. Right, and we're just projecting this on. I didn't get a nice picture of a globe that would fit with these dots, so I left it out. But you can easily imagine a view of the world where you, whenever there's an Amnesty International office, for example, you have a little dot, a little light. Or it's another office of Greenpeace, or if there is a particular event, if there's a dot org, a dot cause internet group, something like that, you have a little light. This is the number of entities, but by themselves, they're really not very interesting. What you want to do is to be able to show the minimum links. The minimum link model in networks gives you, in effect, what Held refers to as extensity. It's a minimally connected graph in terms of graph theory, and you can easily see if you were to take out that particular node right here, then the network would fall apart. So you get a lot of information about the centrality and the reachability of various actors in the network. But extensity itself doesn't tell you much about the overall density of the network, and that is then indicated by intensity. Here we measure all possible links the organization has, or the entities have amongst each other. Right? And even looking at density measures does not give you velocity, where you need to measure how much does actually flow around on the network types, and that is what you get by velocity, where you have a frequency of interaction as well as the possibility of an interaction right there. So what does that mean in terms of network metaphors? In extensity leads us to look for minimally collective graphs, reachability issues, and connectedness, and leading to network size measures more generally. Intensity would be a maximally connected graph. Centrality and center-periphery indicators can be used very nicely, and that's all to do with network density. And finally, we have mass, and that's multiplexity of ties, and really the volume of exchange. If you apply that to the data we have, however crudely, you find in terms of extensity of the network that all of the countries we looked at were covered by INGO connections. Right? There is not really one part of the world using country now as the what we look for, where you do not have a membership or organizational presence of a global civil society entity. So in terms of health's idea of extensity, it is basically there. But how intense is the network? There we find that in the 10 years we looked at between 1990 and 2000, the density really increased dramatically. So in the last 10 years, not the last 10 years, but in the previous decade, we did have a significant increase in the density of global civil society institutions. So going back, this has really increased a lot. There are far more ties going around as well. And the multiplexity, or the velocity, has also somewhat increased, as you can see in the last point, that there's much more going on between those ties. So it has become a far more active network in and of itself. The problem with network analysis, I say that as somebody who has many scars in that regard, is that the data requirements are extremely high, both in terms of quality and in terms of validity. We can probably go much further in terms of showing you different clusters and the like, but we can't do it at the moment because we still haven't finished analyzing the data using various network clustering techniques. What I would like to do in the next step is to see how can we get people included into this measurement approach. So far, we've primarily looked at different forms of organizations, right? Be they a small self-help group of migrants, be they the Ford Foundation or some very large NGO. Let's look at how people come into this. And again, I'd like you to imagine that we have people and their values spread out geographically, and we are looking for clusters. And the approach taken here is what in the social sciences is called a cat net approach. And what it looks for is relationships between people or the members and their participation and the values and attitudes they hold. And what we are looking for are clusters where the membership or the participation profile resembles the value profile. So what we really want to understand is, do people who join global civil society institutions or who participate in global civil society have values different from those who don't, and what are these values? And are they perhaps related to notions of civility, greater tolerance, and the like? The way that's done in a research methodology approach, it, you imagine different values along the columns called V1 to V7, and there would be questions about how tolerant people are, to what extent they like to have immigrants living next to them, and other values, how religious they are, and the like. And then you have the different respondents, and you have a column vector that tells you whether they are member or whether they're not members. And this you can cluster very nicely. Think about survey research data, for example, the European Value Survey, the World Value Survey, or related questions or batteries of questions asked in the British Social Attitude Survey, in the US General Social Survey. All of these can, in fact, be used to look for such clusters where membership coincides with certain values, and we want to know who are these people and how do they relate to each other. What you see here is what a program or the approach typically does. It looks across the rows, and you see that the first and the fourth row, or person one should say, have indeed the same value profile, and they're very different from the others. And here, when the program also looks down, or the approach, the different programs to do that, the approach looks down the columns, and you see that value 1 and value 7 are quite similar in the way they are spread out right here. So in the end, if you were to combine the various indicators of global civil society, you can start asking what is really the most important question, which is the theoretically relevant question: what is it all about? What is the impact of global civil society? So David Held calls it impact propensity. It's all right, but it really means, you know, what is the effect of global civil society on globalization or on other variables we might be interested in. For example, policy making, policy formation, performance, what does it do to alliances, potential alliances, power relations, diffusion processes, and the like. So once we have a way of capturing global civil society, either as a relational term around organization or as a relational term around value participation, then we can develop a look like that, develop hypotheses. This is ultimately what the social sciences are all about. We can say, is really the impact of global civil society additive to globalization, that it just is more of it and makes it possible, or is it multiplicative, that we have some very interesting interactions going on, or is it in a different relationship with economic globalization, which has been probably the main driver over the last decade. So this is the network approach. As you can probably see, it's quite demanding, primarily in terms of data quality. The methodologies are there, the technicalities have been worked out. But our challenge at the moment is to see if we find the right links in the networks to really test some of these ideas. It is different with the indicator approach. The indicator approach is a bit less demanding when it comes to input, but it's a bit more complex to deal with in the end, because you do have quite complicated measurement models, so they come out more complicated than you want them to be. So there are two approaches when you follow the indicator model. So can we have an indicator for global civil society? That's the question. The first one is simply additive. You have an additive score. The most famous one, I'm sure many of you have come across it, is the Human Development Index, HDI. HDI takes life expectancy, educational attainment, and per capita income at purchasing power parity, and combines it into one measure. And that's published every year, and it's quite useful to do, but it comes at a price, or, and I'll tell you the price in a moment, or you say, well, let's not assume that we can simply add things and divide them the way we want. Let's assume that the various indicators we had, if you remember this fairly complex chart, does something. It does what we call, it measures an unobserved construct. So what you really want to follow is a factor analytic approach and say, well, do the data in a way add up to a cluster, or a cluster might be the wrong term, but add up to a variable that helps us combine it into one number. This is the Human Development Report. What it does, it computes a fairly simple index. What the index does, it takes variables like educational attainment, life expectancy, and purchasing power parity, GDP, into one common metric, right, and then adds it and divides it by 3, and it ends up ranking between 0 and 1. That's the approach here. And we could do that, indeed. We could construct a civility index, we could construct a infrastructure index and a participation index for the countries in that for which we have data. And if you do that, a civility index, for example, would be a combined measure of cosmopolitan values held in the population, such as tolerance, concern for humankind, solidarity with outsiders, compassion towards those in need. This is what a ranking of countries would be, using those data. These data are taken from the European Value Survey and the World Value Survey. So they are population surveys, and I don't have to explain to you how fragile these surveys sometimes can be. And so these are fairly aggregated data, because we take averages of some sort from a population survey, typically 1,000 to 2,500 people, and take that average, throw it into the equation, and this is what you get. If you do that over the range of countries, and some of the countries might surprise you, and others don't. Right? But that we haven't finished that work, so we're still feeling our way through and trying to understand why do we get countries. I'm not going to mention any that you wouldn't expect among the top 10, and some countries are not there, which you would expect. We did the same for infrastructure. There we looked at a density measure for international NGOs and international associations for a particular country. And you have countries like the United States. You see, this is a statistical artifact. The United States is low. It is, in fact, not a real zero. It just is rounded up because we relate it to population size. Right, so we do have to correct for that. And you have a country like Barbados coming up very high. Participation index is similar. Participation measures individual involvement and voluntary work in voluntary organizations, associations, and the similar. But those only those concerned with international issues. And some of those you would expect. This is probably a more solid measure among the three. But you wonder how Greece comes very high, which typically does not rank very high in terms of associational membership. But we know Sweden, the Netherlands, and the United States are typically very high when it comes to membership data. But keep in mind, this is the approach taken by the very simple index approach, where we really add up various categories. Right? An alternative approach is to use an unobserved construct. You come up with a theoretical idea, a concept, a model that you want to test, and you want to see if it holds any water, if indeed your data structure reflects what you think makes up a global civil society. So this is what we try to do, and I should really say that Sally Stairs has been fantastic in testing some of these models. Here we say that these various indicators we call participation, infrastructure, and civility are unobserved constructs of some of those underlying indicators, like petition signing, being member of a third world movement, being member of an environmental group, and lack of aversion against immigrants, and the extent to which you want to teach your children values like tolerance. If we do that, I spare you the model, but what comes out is that the data tell us that the world is simpler than the theoretical model we have in mind. The data tell us that what seems to be happening is that participation and civility are so closely related that they may not be quite separate constructs at all, that they are an amalgam of something. And so in the end, we may have one indicator measuring individual attributes, right, the extent to which people participate, the extent to which they have values, cosmopolitan values, and the like, and then the world of organizations, which is not a bad finding, except that we thought at the beginning it's much more complicated than it turned out to be. Unfortunately, we haven't implemented the simpler model yet, because it all happened later this afternoon. But what we have is just a different ranking, where we use now the factor scores rather than the raw scores, which we did in the human development approach. These are the scores for the top 16 countries. And we should say that data problems, you see right here, we have only 32 countries on the final index. That's very often you have missing data criteria. So Sweden, Netherlands, Iceland. See, this looks somewhat more solid than some of the other rankings you've seen. It's a bit more refined. And you probably would find it difficult to argue that some of those countries should not be on the list. And these are the other countries that for which we have data. Now, keep in mind, these are only 32, and there's a serious bias towards the OECD. There are very few developing countries in there. It's largely OECD and some Eastern European countries in there, Argentina and Mexico in addition. So with that, we said, well, can we validate it? What happens if we take the index of global civil society so developed, right, and compare it to things like the Human Development Indicator or some other measure, as I'll show you in a moment. And it seems to be the case, and these are quite promising patterns which you see there, that we can say that the index has at least some construct validity, that it seems to behave similar to the way other indicators behave in that, but which we say there is some relation. For example, this is the Human Development Indicator, and you see that countries which rank high in civility are also those countries which are high on the Human Development Indicator. And those that rank high on participation are also those which are high on Human Development Indicator. Somewhat different, you see, for the infrastructure measure. This is the density of INGOs, where the R square is just 13, so 0.13. That's not very good, which is probably suggests that there's some curvilinear effect here, as you can see that we have a lot of blue spots down here. So the curve really sags like that, and that accounts for the low variance, proportional variance explained. And this is the one with GDP, which again sees a very good performance in relation to civility and participation, but the infrastructure measure lags behind, which is, I think, theoretically an interesting finding. So what are the implications of this so far from a measurement perspective? I think we can say that the theoretical model is more complex than the data structure suggests, but we need to reflect on this a bit. And the empirical results show that civility as a measure and participation as a measure are very, very closely related. And we may have to think about a model with fewer indicators, one along organizations, organizational infrastructure, and the other one around individuals. The next steps are to validate a measurement model. The greatest challenge is, I think, to link the network and the index approach, and something we can't really do by ourselves, but we need others, are to improve the data coverage and the data sources. You've probably noticed that there are certain elements of global civil society I did not really go into a lot, but they are certainly important. So social movements and grassroots groups and these loose networks, very often networks around the internet, we simply don't have very good measures there. So we ended up using NGO data because there was very little else we could use, but we would love to incorporate the more non-organizational aspects like networks. Events, you could easily include events there. I said little about religious elements and world cultures and some of the other elements that you would certainly like to work on once you have the index under control. Particular innovation and diffusion patterns would be a fascinating area to work on. And finally, in particular light of recent events, we need to think about, I mean, we said global civil society is a normative concept, but I don't think that absolves us from looking at the dark side of it and looking at uncivil civil society, if you so wish. But I think if we have data problems on civil society, they pale in comparison to the data problems we will have when we try to look at the dark side or dark matters. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Helmut, for a very extensive and dense lecture. which covered a lot of ground. So I hope that a few people have some questions. We have a little bit of time for questions. Yes.
How would you define civil society? Global civil society.
Which society?
Global civil society.
Yes.
The second question is, what practical use can this be of for anyone? And the third question is, has this kind of study been done before?
I did define global civil society or civil society as the sphere of our values, organizations, networks that are not part of other institutional complexes of modern societies like the family, the state, and the market. And this sphere has the additional qualification that it's not supposed to be part of a national culture or national society. So it has to be, you might say, on top or across something. That's how we define it. You see, it's what is called an operational definition, a definition that does not say what it does. It doesn't tell you what's ultimately in it. It doesn't say anything about the function of it. It simply lists a number of elements that lead you closer to measurement, which is the purpose of an operational definition. Has this work been done before? Yes and no. See, we did not go out in the end and collect all the data ourselves. So there are many, many people, many organizations in different parts of the world collecting this type of information, like the World Value Survey, prominently the European Value Survey, the Union of International Associations in Brussels for many, many decades has been collecting information on international associations. So that part of the work is there, and it's going on as we speak. I think the novelty that we're doing is in combining, rethinking, developing the meaning behind the data and analyzing it accordingly. What is the practical implication? That's always a bit of a challenging question when you address somebody like me who thinks of himself as a methodologist at heart. I think that practical questions are tremendous. First of all, to the extent to which we contribute by trying to clarify a concept, by trying to measure a concept, the extent to which we contribute to the possibility of debate, to the possibility that we can say this is the size of global civil society and here are some of the issues around it, we can inform activists of global civil society, we can inform policymakers. A problem in the field, to the extent I see it, and keep in mind, I'm fairly new to it, and I've been working on this for a number of years now, is that there is not the dialogue is very often quite difficult because we use different terminologies, we misunderstand each other. And I said it as a social scientist, and I think that can perhaps contribute to clarity. And never underestimate the power of numbers in the policy dialogue.
Okay, yes.
I've had a chance to read through this book a bit, and there's what struck me is that there's this this tension, which is also incidentally expressed in the cover, which is that on one hand, sort of global civil society is supposed to be all about discussion and diversity and all of that, yet on the other hand, I have a really strong sense, and I mean, we saw it again now in the data, that it's also really a profoundly normative vision and a very unifying vision. And I mean, I really don't want to get into sort of Western hegemony or anything, but I have a slight concern in the sense that sort of under this veil of we're just we're just providing the facts, we're just methodologists. In fact, you are, I mean, a certain model is being propagated, and I'm not surprised, I have to say, to see on top of the civility index, Sweden, Netherlands, and so on, you know, that we have sort of, well, basically it's about social democracy, for instance, being spread about around the world, I mean, if to put it a bit, to overstate the point a bit. So I want to ask, I mean, how, I mean, do you think, how do you feel about this line, in a sense, about truly making sense of difference, or actually being more unifying and being normative? I mean, it's not a very specific question, but.
Shall we take both questions?
Yeah, I had a similar comment. I was going to ask you how politically biased is your actual definition of civil society and your analysis of the civil society?
Let me take the last one first. I don't know. I don't know how politically biased it is. It is something that you cannot say from the outset. The proof of, you might say, political cleanliness, which is what you want, comes much later. Once, if you understand that you're missing certain aspects in parts of the world in a very systematic way because of the definition you've chosen, or that you overemphasize other aspects because you went down an organizational route and an individual route. And there may be other ways in which civil societies or global elements of global civil society materialize, express themselves.
What about the other question?
I wasn't quite clear, in fact, if I can return it, if you thought that if there is a unifying element behind it, that that's a problem, or whether you see that as something that's quite all right. And what is being unified? I wasn't quite sure. Well, I think there's an underlying value base behind it. There's a normative approach to global civil society. But whether it is unifying, I think we try to have an open mind. We did have a meeting a few months ago looking at conceptions of civil society in very, very different parts of the world, and basically non-Western parts of the world. But I don't think we have translated that yet into this measurement model. Do you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to add a couple of things, and also then ask you a question myself. I mean, one thing is that in the yearbook we actually don't come down with a particular definition of global civil society. I mean, we do think there are competing definitions, and the discussion about competing definitions is part of what it's about. But when you come to produce data, you need an operational definition. So Helmut's definition is an operational definition. And my question to Helmut, I really have two questions thinking about this, is one, whether in fact the index does reflect this operational definition, because is participation and civility, well, civility is definitely about attitudes to foreigners, despite my doubts about some of the countries that are included in that list and my questions about the data, but we can leave that aside. But is participation about participation in general or participation in global issues? Because I think that's one of, you know, if we're thinking of civil society in a classic territorially bounded sense, then yes, you will get the Netherlands and Sweden, and we know that. They fit those definitions. But if you're thinking about engagement in a global scale, I don't know whether that would be the same. So that's one question. And my other question actually is a question to ourselves about the infrastructure. I'm interested in that divergence between the infrastructure and human development index. And it did occur to me that this may be because of our, that actually this may fit this imperialist notion of NGOs, that in fact, where you get, as it were, what somebody calls the NGOization of political space, you actually reduce other elements of participation. That, in fact, the NGOs take over from political parties, from social movements, from local community groups. Mm. And so you might actually find that NGOs, far from being a measure of civil society, are actually actually goes in the opposite direction.
Oh, that's a nice thought. But it would work if it were the other way around. Because the curve, if you remember, sagged this way.
But
if you said that NGOs crowd out other institutions, it should have gone this way.
Oh,
but
okay.
It went that way. But that's a hypothesis which should particular, which we could observe if we were to include countries that are low on the human development index and low on per capita GDP and other measures, and they are high on infrastructure.
Right.
Then
okay.
That, but we don't have that with these countries.
We get it the other way around.
And I think your first question, it is well taken. What we did not only measure participation as such, but only participation in types of organizations, typically membership organizations, that have an international, or you might say, a global appeal. Membership in human rights groups, membership in environmental organizations, and the like. Of course, we never know with these data whether the person is just member of a little group around the corner and they're hugging trees, or whether they really are concerned about some wider environmental issues. That we don't know.
Wait a second, I'm going to take the lady at the back first.
How far do you think the growth of capitalism is linked to the growth of civil society? Because I had a look at the yearbook as well, but there are others like William Robinson who go into details talking about capitalism per se and linking it to civil society, whereas you don't do that in your yearbook. And secondly, there's a chapter on it which talks about plant biotechnology, and I just feel that there's, because we tend to talk of global civil society as this one concept, like a unified world, but there's this danger because the way we see civil society in India is, I think, different from the way you see it in the UK or the US. For instance, the entire GM crop movement, which is pioneered by Vandana Shiva, who is also mentioned in your book, talks very differently of genetically modified crops and what the farmers have to say in India, say, compared to the way the movement is taking shape in the UK or the US. So don't you think there's a danger that the ideas of the Western world may get imposed, you know, on the other world, in spite of the other positives that you've talked about?
Let me say at this point, since we're getting into a more general discussion, I would really like the other people who work on the yearbook to come in if they wish. There's Marlies Glacius, who is the editor of the yearbook, and she knows some of those chapters much, much better and a greater depth than I do. For example, the chapter you refer to, biotechnology. I don't think I'll be able to answer that in the way you would like me to. So perhaps if Mary or Marlies would know how to relate to that.
Do you want to say something, Marlies?
No.
I mean, there's a more profound general issue, which is actually going to be the theme of this year's, of the next yearbook, which is civil society a Western imposition? And we had a fascinating, we're going to have a chapter actually written by a professor of political science from the University of Delhi is writing the chapter on that for the next yearbook. And I think it depends, again, on your definition of civil society. And one of the things that's come out of all our discussions, and as Helmut mentioned, we had a conference, is that at the end of September, is that the rediscovery of civil society actually came out of Eastern Europe and Latin America, and they saw it as being about popular politics, social movements, challenging the establishment. But in the 90s, it got taken up by donors and international financial institutions who were saying not that civil society is about a new form of radical politics, but civil society is what we have in the West. And we're going to go around paying NGOs to teach the rest of the world what civil society is. And I think in this meaning of civil society, there is a real tension between this Western neoliberal view and this much more progressive view that offers a possibility for a new form of politics that's connected across boundaries. And in a way, what we wanted to do with the yearbook was to try to express that tension. This is, in a way, a common ground on which the establishment can talk to peasant movements. Mm. And that was our idea. That was deep at the idea of the yearbook. And what we found in the meeting we had in September was that actually the meaning of civil society depended on political context much more than cultural context. In the Indian subcontinent and in Africa, there was a tendency, well, especially in East Africa, to see civil society as a Western imposition. Whereas in the Middle East, many of the groups saw it as a form of political emancipation. Mm. And so I think it depends on, you know, the politics, the actual experiences in each region.
And I think some of the questions that you're posing express a bit the tension that we deal with in the yearbook all the time. Is it, in fact, a Western concept, or does it have repercussions in other parts of the world as well? Are there different versions of civil society? But all of that doesn't prevent you from measuring it or trying to measure it.
So
I think there was a...
There's several
maybe
more.
One more question.
Let's take two more, because you had a question too, didn't you? Yeah. And then we've got two questions here. And we'll take them both at once, and then...
Yep.
What I wondered was, do you think people who actually join a social movement understand that they are participating in global or in civil society, do this because they feel that it's very important to them, it's a single issue politics, it's something that really affects them? Does the average person know that they're actually participating in this bigger sort of theme?
Probably not, no.
No. So really, you've got to really relate to a group and sort of, well, what is the point of it otherwise, unless people actually know they're participating?
Well, I think, and again, I'm not sure why I'm answering all these questions. giving it a name, a grand name like civil society, is a way of legitimizing these activities. I think the problem that we have is, particularly on a global level, there aren't those many mechanisms through which people can have access to the centers of power. And this is, in a way, what it's all about. And by saying this is civil society, this is something important, this is something institutions take seriously, and by putting it in a book, it gives the whole, it gives you a greater legitimacy. You're something more than just somebody who's concerned about a particular issue. You have a right to be heard. Now, we had that one last question just here.
Before you answered, I think this is a fundamental problem in the social sciences. To what extent do you have to be aware of the larger consequences, the larger context in which you act when you go and buy a hamburger for lunch or a sandwich? Are you aware that you're in fact contributing a certain portion to GDP or to value added? Of course you're not, but at the same time, we would say that it's part of an economy, but you act in your own self-interest. So if people participate in a local environmental movement, they may do so very selfishly. They may not even think about the wide implication for humankind, but the aggregate outcome of it, that's what we're interested in ultimately. What is the structure of associational membership and participation that emerges from these individual selfish or altruistic acts of individuals?
We actually have two more questions, Helmut. I hope you don't mind, and we'll take them both at once. So
okay,
don't answer straight away.
As long as you answer, no problem. Let's go.
Mine is a bit more of a general comment, and it's also focusing on the definition of civil society. If I remember the definition that you showed to us just earlier, it actually tends to focus more on what civil society excludes as opposed to the components that civil society includes. And if you, I think the danger in making up this definition itself is identifying the components that make up civil society. Like the lady behind me just said, a Western understanding of what makes up civil society is actually different from in other continents. And I think the Western perspective is actually trying to identify it based on institutional frameworks of civil society, whereby in the most developing countries, there are many components that we could see as civil society that would not be as institutionalized and organized as what the Western construction or conception of what civil society is. I think that one of the things that needs to be focused on is a more generalized, more inclusive discussion and debate as to what actually makes up the individual components that make up civil society for us to be able to come to a consensus.
Very good. Can I just
do you want to answer
respond
it before
to that?
We get the last question?
Sure.
Or shall we have the last? Let's just have, there's a last question, the lady over here at the back.
Hello. I can understand how you measure participation by the actual civil society, but I was a bit confused as to how you go about measuring like lack of aversion to foreigners or tolerance towards children. How would you actually measure that?
Yeah, thank you. These are very concrete questions. Let me take that one first. These are based on population survey questions that have been asked over the last 3 decades at regular intervals in 2 projects. One is the World Value Survey, and the other one is the European Value Survey. And they have a question, or a battery of questions, really, relating to the extent to which people have exclusionary values. So would they mind having immigrants living next to them? Would they mind having foreigners living next to them? Would they mind having alcoholics living next to them? And so on. It goes through a whole, it's really a social distance measure, what it tries to establish. And the one about tolerance is a very, I like that question a lot, but it has a social desirability bias, perhaps. It has, what are values that you want to see in your children? And it lists 10, 12 different values, from selfishness to ambition, competitiveness, and it includes also tolerance. So we took some values like tolerance as indicative. So it's not how tolerant a person is, but how tolerant a person, now, how much you see tolerance as a value to be instilled in children. So, like all of these questions, you can argue about them and you can different ways. I think we just need more and better measures of these things over time. And the gentleman back there, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more that there is a way in which what we have done so far probably systematically excludes particular institutions, or particular ways of organizing and engaging in civil society. But let not the great be the enemy of the good. That's how I approach it and say, let's work with what we have and expand it. So I don't think there would be necessarily contradiction between the type of operationalization you saw here and some of the measurement that would preclude you and prevent you from using what might be then called equivalent models of civil society, or equivalent elements of civil society in Latin America or Africa. It's part of a longer research strategy. This is by no means the end product. It's not even the beginning, you might say.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
That was very stimulating, and we've got a lot of discussion to have still. So if anybody has comments, do let us know. And have a look at our website and our book.
And we have even order forms in case you...
Yeah, we even have order forms in case you want one at a discount. So thanks very much, everybody.
Thanks again, everybody.